It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Almost 14 million acres of land in Wisconsin is devoted to farming and food production.
Some farmers have found ways to minimize pollution and better coexist with wildlife.
The family of Valerie Dantoin Adamski and Rick Adamski have been farming 260 acres in Shawano County for more than a century, and they've made efforts to tread lightly on the land. On Sunday, the Adamski family was presented with the 2024 Leopold Conservation Award for their efforts to protect the soil and water and preserve some of their land for wildlife. Valerie, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks, Kate, and thanks for letting us share our story.
And Rick, welcome to you.
Thank you, Kate, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Valerie, let's start with you. You have submitted a proposal to the Wisconsin Conservation Congress that would change the way farmers are reimbursed when wolves kill their livestock. What is your idea here?
This is about a proposal to help wolves and farmers not be in conflict. And we just want to make sure that farmers are using appropriate techniques to take care of, if they do have a wolf predation on their farm, to take care of it and do something different so the wolves just don't keep coming back for a snack. And it's not fair to the wolves to blame the wolf if the farmer is doing less than good husbandry practices and letting the wolves come in and take livestock, which usually isn't the case. And so this is just an effort to have the wolves be accountable, but also the farmers be accountable.
Is there an example here, perhaps from your farm, a way that farmers can better protect their animals or their crops from wildlife?
Sure. We have hens that are out on pasture, and they have a mobile coop, and they lay eggs in that coop. And we put up electric net wire fencing in a very big, almost football-sized field around that perimeter to keep foxes out. And the other thing we can do is put flagging up to keep owls and hawks and that sort of thing away. So there's a lot of options that farmers have. Electric wire, electric fencing is our number one go-to.
Rick, can you walk the terrain with us? How does your farm make space for other wildlife around the farm?
Well, we are near 8 miles to the west of us. The Navarino Wildlife Area is present, which is a large area where wildlife congregate. We've got some passageways, some corridors between our farm and that Navarino Wildlife Area. There are small woodlots both in that corridor as well as a small woodlot on our farm. We've got a drainage way that's got a buffer strip with some woody vegetation. So those are the practices that we put in place to enable wildlife to live with us as we farm.
So, you know, wildlife are on the move. And so you've created these, you know, migration corridors for fox and for badger and pheasants so that they can more easily get around.
Yeah, what we've done is actually extended areas around a creek that runs through the farm. We call them buffers or corridors, and we've added pollinator habitat, so we encourage more pollinator species. We kept our pond as a pond. We didn't drain it, and we know that attracts wildlife. We have migrating waterfowl in the spring and in the fall, and lots of frogs and amphibians. So we're trying to do as much as we can to not use the farm as just an afterthought for wildlife, but to build in spaces where they can coexist with us without any economic harm to the farm. In fact, we're pretty sure that, for instance, having fox on the farm is a good thing because it keeps the rodent populations down. And we have our son and daughter-in-law have an organic vegetable operation, and rabbits and mice will damage their crops. So we think the foxes are a net plus on the farm, and all we have to do is enhance the protection for the chickens.
Hmm. I wonder if these buffers and spaces weren't there, if the pond wasn't there, do you know, can you envision what shape the land would be in?
Well, we haven't done any land shaping. The land itself, naturally is more of a mixed conifer hardwood. We're in the on the edge of the northern hardwoods, so we would be in that transition zone. And as our climate is changing, we would probably see a lot of the same mixed vegetation that we see in some of the woodlands around here. I'm going to jump back to Valerie's comments and your questions about wildlife. And one area species that we're not looking at are the grassland bird habitat. That group of wildlife and birds are the most decimated by farming practices. And we have continuously seen bobolinks and meadowlarks and other grassland birds on our grazing pastures. In fact, the Audubon Society is partnering with NRCS, and we're interested in enrolling in a program to even further enhance the wildlife habitat or the grassland bird population on our farms by the practices of managed grazing.
And Kate, if you don't mind, if I follow up also on what would the landscape here look like if we weren't actively trying to include wildlife? And I'll tell you, our farm looks like an oasis or an island in the middle of brown corn and soy fields right now. So they've been harvested, plowed down, or tilled under, manure's been spread on them. There's no place for wildlife on those farm fields. And so we're this wonderful green island, and that actually goes to the core of what we try and do, which is managed grazing, which is a practice that keeps a green living blanket covering the entire farm all year round. So there's living roots in the soil. There's a lot of organic matter in that soil. We're capturing carbon all year round. And we don't plow. We just don't do annual crops like corn and soy. We have the perennial pasture-based farm. Our livestock, our 100 head of beef cattle, are all grazing year round. In fact, right now they're still out on the fields, but what they're being fed is stored winter hay in big round bales.
Rick, your family has been farming this land for over a century, and I wonder, did your ancestors follow these type of sustainable practices, or have you found this a new ethic and a new approach on the farm?
Valerie came up with the name of Full Circle Farm because many of the practices that we embrace today are practices that were utilized by our ancestors. I think that grazing is probably the most prominent example of those practices. And what we believe is that technology is sometimes covers up some of the harms that we're doing. We are not taking fully account full accounting of the external events that are happening or the negative events. So I think that indeed my ancestors were using not managed grazing, but grazing, putting the livestock on the land during the growing season, both the cattle and the hogs, as well as the chickens, which happens to be discovered now as one of the five principles of soil health is to incorporate livestock on the land, as well as keeping a cover on the land and minimizing tillage. All of those things are practices that were done maybe because technology didn't enable us to do other things.
We're talking with the winners of this year's Leopold Conservation Award. That is Rick Adamski and Valerie Dantoin Adamski. They own Full Circle Farm in Shawano County. Valerie, you have 100 head of cattle on the farm along with other livestock. Can you talk further about managed grazing to protect the soil and how it perhaps differs from conventional cattle farms and what they're doing?
Sure. We're also organic, so we use no antibiotics or hormones. We don't use herbicides or pesticides. And that's okay. That's pretty easy to do when you're using managed grazing, which simply means planting a really healthy, lush pasture crop of clovers, alfalfa, and various grasses. And that's what the cattle eat. And they get a separate piece every day, usually. They move around the farm, sort of how you know, if you were painting a bridge, the bridge painters start on one end and it takes them, you know, every day they can do a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more till they get to the other end. Same thing happens on our farm. The cattle rotate around the farm, one paddock at a time, until about 30 days later, they come back to that first piece. And guess what? The pasture has regrown and it's viable again. They can eat it. We put really good average daily gain weight on our cattle. So we're direct marketing all our beef as grass-fed organic beef through our Full Circle Farm. And we think this is quite different than conventional beef, where the cattle are housed on a lot or a yard that is in Wisconsin, typically concrete, and they are fed in a bunk feeder where the farmer brings corn silage or other harvested feed up to the cattle. But we know that cattle have 4 feet. They can walk, let them go out in the field, harvest their own food, and then also deposit their manure out there. So we have way less manure handling than a conventional farm that has to have either a manure lagoon and then spread that poop in the fall after the summer crops have come off the fields, or they spread it early in spring before they plant the next year's crop. So that's the main difference, is how we feed our cattle. They're not confined. Even in winter, they can go out to the field and come back up to the barns for shelter if it's a bad day, windy and a blizzard or something like that. But most days you'll find the cattle out in the field, just relaxing next to their hay feed for the winter for the day.
Rick, I want to turn to your CSA efforts. Your farm works with other farms with a subscription box operation. Can you explain how this cooperative process works?
It started with Valerie's students at the NWTC Organic and Sustainable Ag Program who were enrolled in her class and wanted to figure out a way to better distribute the produce. Farmers have a good way of producing, but not always the best way of distributing and getting produce to market. So, following the tradition of agriculture and agricultural cooperatives for selling produce, that's what we did. We were on a small scale. We have probably about nine smaller producers in partnership with Full Circle Farm. And both the meat products as well as the vegetable products are combined through the more so during the growing season, the spring, summer, and fall. Our customers are able to go online, check off the products that they want, and not order the products that they don't want. And those orders are then fulfilled the next week. Boxes are distributed by our delivery truck or gathered at a central location. And that's how we're operating this cooperative called the Slow Farmers Cooperative, which is a spinoff of the slow food movement. We want to enhance the value of quality of the food as well as local food.
You know, through the course of the conversation, you've described sustainable practices that are just, you know, in the fabric of how you operate each day on the farm. But to make, Valerie, these positive environmental impacts, it really requires a lot of farms to be banding together on these types of efforts. And I'm wondering, are farm operations in your region joining you, or are you trying to team up with other farms on these types of initiatives?
We are teaming up with other farms. That's what the whole cooperative is about, so that we're not competing with each other, because then that only drives prices lower for us. And we don't want to have higher prices for our customers. So we talk about a value chain. Instead of a food chain, it's a value chain where everybody gets the right value that's appropriate for their place in the food system. So we as farmers deserve a decent living wage, and our son and daughter-in-law's farm, along with their LLC partner Scott, they deserve to be able to hire workers. They have a little mini economy going out there. They call their farm Full Circle Community Farm, and they usually have 8 to 10 people working with them, young people in the summertime, who want a pathway into farming and want to learn how to do this and want to participate in the food system, mostly as growers. So on a small, diversified scale, more and more people, especially women farmers, want to participate in the farm economy this way. It's just we don't obviously have a path for the big milk producers up in our area, the CAFOs with, you know, a couple thousand cows. They're selling their milk through a different avenue. That's commodity milk. And we just don't have a way to bring them in.
Valerie and Rick, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on the award.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Rick Adamski and Valerie Dantoin Adamski. The farm was just presented with Wisconsin's Leopold Conservation Award.